Privilege to be here this morning. Good to see each of you. Thanks for the 30% of you that are smiling right now. We've been going through, first of all, before that, prayer nights. I want to just say that these have been really great, and it's been great to see having them in different people's homes. Started the Eckerts, and we were at the Jansons last week, and we're going to be at the Neen Campers this week. It's open to everyone to be able to come. As well, and part of that is we're also trying to hear one another as well. And this last week, just before our prayer night, Rose Scott did a presentation on what does leadership look like in the church, and did a fantastic job of us looking and seeing that Jesus is actually serving, came under to serve, and that's what we're. As the leadership of our Coast Hills, we want to be able to do that too. So part of it is this trajectory that we're on to hearing each other. And so a part of our prayer night on Monday night will be Rose and I facilitating an opportunity to hear from each other and about maybe what are our giftings and what would you like to be moving towards. And so we encourage you, if you haven't done, on our website, there's a gift assessment. So you can do that. It's really easy. I've looked at it. You can go in there and do your gifts assessment. And if you come up with your top three gifts, that would be wonderful. We're going to take about 30 minutes at the beginning to just organize a time to be able to hear one another. And then we're going to take some time to pray. So I want to encourage everyone to be able to come to that. It'll be very beneficial for you as well as us as a church corporately. The other thing is that February 18th, then we're going to try to get ministry leaders together as well to hear from one another. And so that's going to be at the Hilton's for waffle breakfast and hearing from each other. And that's really all that's going to be, trying to listen to where we're at as a church. And then March 3rd and 4th, the leadership and the staff are going away on a retreat to distill all of these things. And then we're going to come back down from the mountain like Moses and tell you all what to do. But it's going to be because we've all heard from you first. You kind of hear where I'm leaning towards, right? Is that we really want to try to hear from people before we were saying, okay, this is exactly what we're going to do. So it's a little messy, but it's actually really good. And things have been lining up this way. It's been very good. So that being said, we've been going through Psalm 139 this is the fourth week. Wow. And next week, we're going to be ending our study in Psalm 139. But we've been going through our these weeks. The first week was God knows us. And we talked about that phrase, you're fully loved as you're fully known. And we had people had to sit in that for a bit. And if we're actually fully loved as we're fully known, how would that impact us? How does that change the way we understand how God views us? Week two, we looked at God is with us in the midst of everything. And our friend Glenn had a wonderful quote. God might actually be where we thought God wouldn't be or couldn't be, even in Sheol, even in the place of the dead, the psalmist says. Might God be there? The living God? What? And so I know I've heard from many people saying, it's good to hear that because it didn't seem like God might be around me or in this situation right now. But I can hope and trust that he is. And last week, we looked at God has made us. And that means every person on the planet has intrinsic worth and value. God made us and every person on the planet has intrinsic value and worth. And that ends up shaping who we are as well. Our judgments on people. And this week, we move to what I've called the tricky part. God hears us. And I would say, even in the midst of our humanity. We could say a whole bunch of things after that. But God hears us. Even in the midst of our humanity. I'm going to share something I had a conversation with another pastor friend of mine, and I was kind of explaining, and I've shared this here, He's like, what's one of your biggest fears being lead pastor at this church now? And I said, oh, it's easy. I've already shared this with the church a few times. And he goes, well, what is it? I go, well, it's having something profound to say every Sunday up here. Even though I love preaching, I believe I'm gifted in it. And when I actually get up here, I'm actually not nervous or fearful. But as we lead and studying, and you're going, I need to have something profound to say every week. And then he says, well, it seems like you're trying to hit a home run every week. Well, yeah, absolutely. That's kind of how I am. He says, I just bat for singles. He says, I just go for singles. I'm like, well, what does that mean? He goes, well, I'm going to move them ahead. We're going to keep moving ahead. So we get the first. Next week, we're going to get the second. Next week, we're going to get third. And then eventually, we're going to come home. Sometimes I'm going to take it and hit a pitch. Pitch is going to hit me. But I get a walk to first. And I was like, okay, interesting concept. So I'm not saying that this will be a thing that I prepared to bat a single today. But in the midst of this, I went, oh. And there was a bit of a freeing hearing that. And, you know, sometimes there are some foul balls, right? And sometimes you strike out. And that's when I'm really looking for grace. But I hope I never will strike out. But it was a good analogy for me to go, oh, okay, don't always have to hit a home run. Although I'm trying to do that, okay? Watch out for the big swing, though. And so today, if we can be looking at this, and as we look at this passage, there's so much to be able to unpack in it. But let's read it. Psalm 139, 19 to 22. If only you would kill the wicked, O God. Get away from me, you violent men. They rebel against you and act deceitfully. Your enemies lie. O Lord, do I not hate those who hate you and despise those who oppose you? I absolutely hate them. They have become my enemies. Thus the reading from God's Word. Yeesh. All right, go in peace. Doesn't work, does it? Okay. So, this part of the psalm, Bible scholars would call it an imprecatory prayer, or an imprecatory psalm, where you're actually wishing curses on someone or on some institution. Yeah. I'm like, what? Really? Yeah. You're actually wishing this to happen. So the question is, what does that mean for us? Are we allowed to do this, what David did? So I want to give a brief what we should have done in the very first, we talked a little bit about the Psalms, which we didn't, but let's talk a little bit about this. Walter Brueggemann puts the Psalms into one of three categories, and he goes, I really don't want to categorize things, but it helps us understand and think about these things. He says that a lot of Psalms are written in three different ways, which he actually says that we actually, this is where we might find ourselves in each of these places too. So orientation. So an orientation psalm would be like, life is good. This is how it works. Things are going so well. Orientation psalm. This is the way life should be. Then there's psalms of disorientation, where you're like, what the? And they kind of like, they hit you in the gut. And you kind of like, especially if you're orientated, going, no, this is how life works. And then you're hearing it. You're like, no. Don't you understand? You're supposed to be like this. And yet the psalmist goes, no, I'm over here. This is kind of what happens. And I'm not quite sure what is going on. And Walter Brueggemann would actually say that we actually, at some point, if we're true to ourselves and living honestly, there's going to be times where we are absolutely disorientated in life. And he says, these psalms then are a part that we can identify with. And then there's Psalms of new orientation, where God surprises the person. So that he goes through lament, he's maybe cursing things, and all of a sudden, oh, here's God shows up. God lifted me over the pit. I'm here. Okay, wow. And there's a new orientation. And then what happens with the new orientation is that you look back and you go, okay, orientation, I'm new. So you actually understand where you've come from. And that might help you on the path of where you're going in your life. Some might say spiritual life, but I would say life. Life is spiritual. Everything is spiritual. And so this is kind of what's happening in the Psalms. And that's why many, many scholars will say the Psalms are one of the best, most human prayers that we can be praying and looking at and trying to understand. So this would be something for many of us that might be disorientating. David's a man after God's own heart, and he's praying an imprecatory prayer. He's wishing evil on this. And so we need to try to unpack that. Before we unpack it, we need to understand that humanity does work that way. We're not perfect. So we're actually going to feel some of this stuff in our lives when we're disorientated. Brueggemann, I just want to quote him here. He says, "There is a way beyond the Psalms of Vengeance," which would be this one. But it is a way, do we have that quote there? Owning our humanity. "There is a way beyond the Psalms of Vengeance, but it is the way through them and not around them. Our rage and indignation must be fully owned and fully expressed. And then and only then can our rage and indignation be yielded the mercy of God." It's in the sense of owning where you're at. I've maybe shared this story once before. It's just, would be where my dad growing up, everything was okay. Okay, I'm okay. Everything's okay. Okay, okay. Until all of a sudden when, like, we're in the kitchen, you ask him a question, and he has a bag, like in Ontario, we had bags of milk. Weird, I know. But he got the wrong. My mom said, "Well, you got the wrong milk. Like that's 2% or 1%." And then my dad was, everything was okay until he slams the milk on the ground and milk was all over the kitchen. And he explained, "They didn't have 2%. But everything was okay there for months and months and months until all of a sudden, where I'm not trying to totally unpack my father. Maybe you guys can unpack your own fathers for that matter. And how they shaped you, and then, heaven forbid, how I am shaping my kids. But there's this idea where we need to embrace some of this, these feelings of where we're at. And it's okay. God actually hears those prayers. So we're going to have Darian Julin is going to come up and share a little bit about some of his experience. Darian works with Youth Unlimited in Langley. And they've been coming to our church now since summer, and I've decided to call this home. And I've had numerous coffees with Darian, and he works in wide. I know this isn't the time you're going to unpack that, but there is all kinds of information for you to pick up to learn about Darian. He's right here in our midst, and he's a missionary doing amazing work. And one of the things that he's working with right now is End Exploitation Now. Working with sex trafficking that's happening in Langley and trying to be preemptive in that in the schools. You can talk to more about that later. It's a huge and amazing work, as well as all other kinds of, when you're a youth pastor, youth minister, there's all kinds of things. But he can touch on that a little bit. But he's going to share a little bit about being angry as a Christian and as a leader. What does that look like? So, Darian, go ahead.
Can I steal your...
Yes. Go ahead. I'm going to take...
Yeah, my name is Darian Julin, and I'm the assistant director for Langley Youth Unlimited. Youth Unlimited is a faith-based international nonprofit organization. We were started in the 1940s with soldiers coming home from war. men and women who said, we don't want the next generation to repeat the mistakes that we made. So here in Langley, our dream is that the youth would have the means to live a healthy life, physically, socially, intellectually, spiritually, the whole piece, the whole person. We had 9 staff in Langley, 3 interns, somewhere between 30 and 50 volunteers. You'll find us wherever schools are, or wherever kids are. Schools. Kids are in school, right? So you'll find us in schools. We're in 6 schools in Langley currently. I've turned 4 down this year because I don't have the funding or the staff to put youth workers there. That's kind of a sucky and good problem to have. I work on boards with the superintendent of the district of Langley, the school district. I could put youth workers in every school in Langley if we had the resources. We see the hope and the potential in every young person. We work with all youth, but the ones that God just seems to bring to us are most often the ones that have slipped through the cracks. You wouldn't find them in a church on Sunday morning. There's a lot of reasons for that. Maybe a broken home, a disability, a mental illness, a sexual or gender orientation that doesn't meet our societal norms. These are my friends. I gotta tell you, it's pretty cool to see Jesus in people and places that maybe are unexpected, that are marginalized. I get to do this. I get to see this every day. I wanted to introduce myself and my family a little bit. My wife, Allison, and I have been married for 13 years. I met her riding wingman for my brother, Corey and Aaron Julian. Corey was going on a date with another girl, and he needed someone to come along. I was promised a redhead. She turned out to be blonde, but it worked out in the end. We joked that she brings the book smarts to the relationship and I bring the street smarts. And together we're smart, I guess. My boys, Sawyer and Cohen, you may have seen them. For a while they had mohawks. Now they're just little blonde boys running around. Sawyer's 7, Cohen's 5. Sawyer likes sports and making friends. And Cohen, he likes Lego and making people laugh. That's a little about us. We've been attending Coast Hill since the summer. Corey and Aaron invited us, and we've been attending pretty much ever since. We discovered that my brother and Aaron aren't the only connections we have to this church. Kevin, do you remember way back in like 2003 or 4 going to this Frost Tips? Yeah. Do you remember that there was that junior high youth retreat where with the Fear Factor theme at Stillwood? Kevin and I was a youth pastor, and Kevin was a youth pastor. We both brought our youth groups to the Stillwood junior high retreat. Paul Wortman actually gave my commencement address for my college graduation at CBC. I still remember him talking about how a basketball in my hands is worth $20, but a basketball in Michael Jordan's hands is worth millions of dollars. Still remember it. Well, and Peter Nichol. I mean, everybody seems to know Peter Nichol. We actually really found a home here. It's for the first time our kids actually like coming to church. I've actually not wanted to come to church, and they've wanted to come, and so I've come. I did a U-turn because I didn't want to come. And then my kid's like, no, we should go. And I was like, okay, we'll go. We love the preaching. We love that you empower women. That you have a heart for justice. And that you preach a gospel that's so much bigger than a get-out-of-jail-free card. And then we got to know the people. And we realize it's not just the pastor talking about this stuff, but you're actually living it out. If you don't know, this fall is probably the second hardest time in my 20 years of ministry. And we found God showing up here, ministering to us, sustaining us. Kevin asked me to share about anger and how it impacts my ministry. And that's a bit of a scary thought when you're a missionary speaking for the first time in a new church. Because I'm going to have to be a little more vulnerable than I probably would have liked to. I have a confession to make. I get angry. A lot. I've been angry for years and years and years. I get mad at the people who manipulated and coerced my 13-year-old friend to become a sex slave as they prostituted her out. I get mad at the people and the systems that have failed her time and time again. I get mad at those supposed Christian boys who beat up two 12-year-old girls because they were holding hands. One of them sustaining severe brain damage to the point where she actually lost her life. I get mad at the kid who not only took his own life, but made a suicide pact with a bunch of his friends. I've lost track of the number of suicide attempts connected to that pact. I get mad at churches because I know my gay and trans friends, for good reason, would not feel safe there. I get mad because last year in Langley there were 162 homeless youth that we know of, some of whom I call friends. And despite 8 years of talking, there is still no shelter for youth in Langley. Sometimes I even get mad at God because I followed his call to ministry as a young man, and it left me broken. It's been almost 12 years. And I'm still impacted by post-traumatic stress disorder. It's been almost 12 years, and I still have trouble singing in church. I think God's okay with my anger. I get mad. And I find that God is big enough to deal with my anger, my accusations, my desire for revenge. I get mad and I wrestle with God, and I find him speaking back to me love. I get mad and I pick up my sword to strike down my enemies. And as I wrestle with God in my anger, I somehow find myself putting my sword down and beating it into a plowshare. Oh, the anger still shows up, but so does his love. And in my wrestling, years and years and years and years of wrestling, I found a new sense of purpose. A new sense of calling. I want to read to you an old proverb with an author unknown. On the streets, I saw a naked child, hungry and shivering in the cold. I became angry and said to God, "Why did you allow this? Why don't you do something?" God did not reply. That night, God said quite suddenly, I certainly did something. I made you. So when you turn on the news and you find yourself getting angry and all the hurts and evil and injustice, I want you to remember that there are some people doing something about it. People like Amarjeet and her small group who provide meals for our programs. Roy Jansen, serving in the Vancouver Police Department. Mike Keane, who provides stable employment for people who could never hold down a job. Paul Wortman and Global Disciples. David Gotts, an International China Concern. People like me and my team of youth workers at Youth Unlimited who see the hope and the potential in every young person.
Thank you, Darian. Pretty sure I asked the right person to share. We do. We want to hold out hope. We want to be real, authentic people in the midst of all of life. And I want to encourage you to somehow, I'm just even saying, talk to Darian, partner with him, take him out for lunch, and ask how you might, if you're able to help in that way. So God hears us. He definitely does. And as Darian so eloquently was able to unpack, is that God doesn't necessarily want to just leave us there. That emotion, that anger, those things that are building up inside of us, God is wanting to use those motives for His kingdom. And as I was looking at this, you know, I was explaining, I was like, okay, talk about God hears us. And then I was just like, okay, but Jesus doesn't want us to do that. Like, I'm thinking of, stop. I need to unpack about how we need to love our enemy. And I'm realizing that's actually next week. I'll give you a hint on it this week. But we're going to leave you in some disorientation today. Okay? All right? If you're a guest here, we love you. And we also realize that we want to see some of the hard stuff and figure out let it sit in us too, like the psalmist does. It's interesting. I'm not sure. I don't have it on here, but David, if you can go back to the scripture verse. If you look at where this is, the next verses are quite telling. And that's next week. But don't click on it. But just, you can see them as a shadow. Okay? But there is this part where we're in the midst of praying this prayer and being angry and saying, God, you are the one that is with the enemy. You're the armies that kill your enemies, that win. And yet there's still something that catches him. And he says, examine my heart. See if there's any offensive way in me. And lead me in the way everlasting. And the question is, what is the way everlasting? And that's for next week. But I'm going to scrap a few notes. And I want us to look at the verses of a song. Pronounce this wrong, sorry. Would be Jean Valjean from Les Mis. And Jean Valjean. And I want to unpack this because There's something that happens in his heart and his soul that he sees that he was once an enemy and he was shown love and unconditional love. And then something happened inside of him. And then we find that he, because of what was happening inside of him, enemy love given to him, that he was actually able to show that to someone else. And here are the words from that song. And I think we have them on screen. What have I done, sweet Jesus? What have I done? Become a thief in the night? Become a dog on the run? Have I fallen so far? And is the hour so late that nothing remains but the cry of my hate? The cries in the dark that nobody hears? Here where I stand at the turning of years. If there's another way to go, I've missed it 20 long years ago. My life was a war that could never be won. They gave me a number and they murdered Valjean. When they chained me and left me for dead, just for stealing one mouthful of bread. Yet why did I allow this man to touch my soul and teach me love? He treated me like any other. He gave me his trust. He called me his brother. My life he claims for God above. Can such things be? For I had come to hate the world, this world that has always hated me. Take an eye for an eye. Turn your heart into stone. This is all I have lived for. This is all I have known. One word from him and I'll be back. Beneath the lash, upon the rack, instead he offers me my freedom. I feel shame instead, and inside me like a knife. He told me that I have a soul. How does he know? What spirit comes to move my life? Is there another way to go? I'm reaching, but I fall, and the night is closing in, and I stare into the void. To the whirlpool of my sin. I'll escape now from the world. From the world of Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean is nothing now. Another story must begin. And it is our hope that in the lives, not only of the workers at Youth Unlimited, as they're loving these children, as they're loving these youth, as they're providing space, that another story would begin. And that as we're going to see next week, Jesus isn't actually going for an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. He actually turns things on the heads when it says loving your neighbor is actually no, love your enemy. And yet I want you to sit with that this week and ask you the question, who is your enemy? What's some of the stuff inside you that just makes you very angry because of what has been done and maybe undone in your own life? And would you be able to sit in Psalm 139 this week and meditate on it? If you do this, for me to preach a home run next week, all I have to do is swing like this. Because your hearts will be here and prepared for what God might want to do in and through you. Darian, thanks for hitting a home run. God hears us in the midst of our humanity. God loves us. We're fully known. God is actually where we thought he might or might couldn't or wouldn't be. Every human being has intrinsic worth and value. In the midst of our disorientation, may God give us all a new orientation in the way and the love of Jesus. And this is exactly what we'll be looking at next week. We don't have a song. We're trying to disorientate you. We don't have a closing song today. But we do have a prayer. Darian?
O Christ, our God, who at all times and at every hour in heaven and on earth are worshipped and glorified, who are long-suffering, merciful, and compassionate, who love the just and show mercy upon the sinner, who call all to salvation through the promise of blessings to come. O Lord, in this hour, receive our supplications and direct our lives according to your commandments. Sanctify our souls, hallow our bodies, correct our thoughts, cleanse our minds, deliver us from all tribulation, evil, and distress. Encompass us with your holy angels, that guided and guarded by them, we may attain to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of your unapproachable glory, for you are blessed into ages of ages. Amen.
Are you hurt?